Today's program is brought to you by Firesider, a health tonic based on the traditional New England cure-all of raw apple cider vinegar and honey. For more information, visit firesider.com.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. You, of course, are listening to the Farm Report. I am your host, Erin Fairbanks, and we are coming to you, as always, live from the back of Roberta's Pizza here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It's a little bit of a rainy day, a little bit of a sad, dark day in the studio, but our stomachs are full, our eyes are bright. Last show of the season. I can hardly believe that 2015 is coming to a close. This year went fast for me. I don't know how it went for you guys, but I feel like I almost have to like take a minute to like write down all the things that happened because it was just such a whirlwind. And we have some really big news on the Farm Report. I am taking a little bit of a sabbatical, but don't worry, we will still bring you the Farm Report on the weekly basis. We have a guest host who's going to be taking over for me, kind of manning the ship for the 2016 winter season, and she is here joining us in studio, Holly Cederholm. Welcome to the Farm Report.
Hi, Erin.
Oh, thank you, Liz.
I wasn't expecting that round of applause.
I know, right? We're off with a bang. So I thought it might make sense to kind of get you guys a little acquainted with Holly, some of her background, and then get a little sneak peek of what she has in store for us in the new year. Holly, you have quite an extensive background in agriculture, both from a farming and an organizational management standpoint. You've done a lot of different things. We're going to get to all of those kind of over the course of the next half hour. But before we tuck in, I'm wondering if you can tell us like what sparked your interest in ag.
So I went to an environmental school. I grew up in Connecticut, and I didn't really have an interest in farming. I was interested in food. I became a vegetarian at a very young age, and I think that was kind of always in the back of my head. But I studied environmental writing at Unity College in Unity, Maine, which is also where the oldest organic organization in the country is headquartered, MOFCA, the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. So while I was studying, I quickly became immersed in sort of rural tradition and decided that I wanted to approach an apprenticeship. So in 2005, I went to work on a small farm with a family, just a family of four. The mom ran the farm. The husband worked off farm doing logging. The kids were in college. And I really fell in love with being able to work outside, do stuff with my hands, see things come to fruition under my own efforts, and kind of pursued different opportunities from there.
So when you were a little kid and thinking about, you know, growing up Holly in her like, mid to late 20s, what did you think you were going to be doing?
Well, I actually thought back about this 2 years ago and I kind of hit the mark. I wanted to be an animal conservationist. So I thought that I was going to be working, saving exotic animal species or what we look at as exotic. And now I've sort of shifted that eye towards plants and looking at heirloom plant varieties and heritage breeds. So I think despite not really knowing what I wanted to do, I kind of knew my innate interests at a younger age.
So you graduate from college, you do your first apprenticeship, which lasts how long?
So I did just a summer long apprenticeship because I was, I did it while I was in college.
While you were in college, okay.
So I did it just from, I don't know when the semester ends, June.
Yeah, just like through a college summer.
Yeah. And then the following summer, I went and wanted to do some traveling. So I looked into the Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms program, which some people know as Willing Workers on Organic Farms. And that's just, it's a worldwide network. Different countries have their own associations and others kind of glom together as an independent association. And I went to Scotland and through this kind of volunteer matchmaking service, kind of hopped around on different farms. So I looked at different market models. I spent 3 weeks at four different farms, and I looked at sort of a prescription vegetable box system, farmers market, wholesale directly to restaurants, and sort of a homestead collective kind of approach. And then that was another just a summer in college. And then I sort of realized I could be getting paid to do that work when I returned to college.
Wait a minute.
Being in an ag space in rural Maine, where there is a lot of agriculture, I realized that with a little bit of experience under my belt, I could go and work on farms and continue getting education that I would otherwise have to pay for. There are a lot of ag programs which are great, but I decided I'd rather get hands-on experience and make a buck while doing it. So then I did that for a few years, which took me through graduating college. And at that point, another program of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association kind of steered me to starting my own farm. They have a really special program. They have a journey person program, which is like next level from the apprenticeship. It's mm-hmm. like people who have maybe a season or two and are looking to start their own farm and need a little bit of support can be a journey person. And then they have a really special opportunity called the Farmers in Residence, where on their land base, which is over 200 acres in Unity, where they hold the Common Ground Fair, if anyone's ever heard of that, every September, they have an incubator farm. And every 2 years they let people apply for that. So I basically got to start my farm with very low risk.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting. But ultimately, I think deciding to pursue a career in agriculture is, I don't know, it feels like it's so intimidating. There's so much to know. And you're so a little person at the base of this giant hill of kind of knowledge and experience. And so when you were thinking about, laying down the bones of your first operation, what were some of the things that you considered and maybe moved forward on and also maybe decided were actually not going to be a fit for you?
So I did a lot of experimenting. Vegetables were always at the core. I really like interacting with plants. And I also really love seeds. So I think that, and I also had all of this experience with vegetables. So it made sense to kind of be like, this is something I can do with less infrastructure. And it's annual. So right. I can just start. And if it doesn't work, I can switch to something else. Whereas if you're investing in dairy or something like that, you have to build up equipment and it's a perennial sort of agriculture. So I really focused on doing, and plus the incubator farm, when I applied with a business plan in place. So that it was already kind of tailored to that. There was 2 acres set up for organic production of crops. So it made sense for me to go into vegetables. So from there, I trialed a lot of different varieties. I was very interested in seed production. And seed production is not, it's getting bigger in the Northeast, but when we think of seed production, that's not the first region in the country we jump to.
Just because we have a shorter growing season here, or?
We have a shorter growing season. It's wetter during key parts of the season when certain crops might be needing to dry down. So there's higher disease issues that can be presented. But in reality, it's a really great region to grow a lot of crops. And I think we should be growing, side note, we should be growing seed for the crops that we're producing because they'll be more acclimated to our growing region and our style. But
can I just, I want to just ask, what's a good example crop for us to talk through a little bit?
Tomatoes might be a good
one. Okay. So if I'm growing tomatoes to fill orders in the CSA or bring to market, how is that kind of process or variety or harvesting different if what I'm doing is growing tomatoes to essentially smash them up and pull the seeds out?
With tomatoes, that's pretty much what you're doing. Tomatoes are, so there's a little bit of biology that's involved, but tomatoes are an easy one because they're They're not cross-pollinating. By and large, they're self-pollinating, so you don't have to worry about isolation issues as you do with some other crops. And the other key thing with that is the seed is mature in tomatoes when the fruit is mature, whereas, for instance, if you think of summer squash and winter squash, mm-hmm. summer squash, the like it would you'd have to let it go to the length of like a winter squash to get like hard for their seeds to be mature. So tomatoes are really, I mean, you're doing the same things you're doing as a market grower bringing tomatoes to market. And you just smash them up, you let them ferment a little bit, you decant the water and the bad seed. Well, you mix some of the water and you decant the water and the bad seeds off, and then you've got seeds that you can dry down and replant. It's a little more complicated, again, based on like biology and some other things, but it's tomatoes are one that the Northeast could really, we could all be growing our tomato seeds.
Well, it seems like a lot more work than opening my seed catalog and getting a package of seeds in the mail. So why kind of go through that trouble?
Well, it's if you save your own tomato seeds, you're going to get way more than a packet of seed. So okay. It could be cost effective in the long run. Mm-hmm. And seeds do, there's different viability levels on seeds in terms of them germinating repeatedly as time goes on. But most part it's, you know, it's, they'll remain good for several years if kept well. But one of the biggest benefits, is that you can start to kind of adapt the seed or work in this adaptive relationship with the seed to make it better suited for your region.
Okay.
So, if you're even say you had a tomato variety that you had gotten somewhere, the Pacific Northwest, well, they have a shorter growing season in some ways too, but somewhere that doesn't have, maybe the Southeast where it has a little bit, it's used to growing a little bit longer, but you want it to be an earlier season. I mean, you just can start to select for things that make sense specifically on your farm. So
that would be like, I have my, you know, little area of tomato plants, and I'd be like, ooh, this plant's doing really well and bearing a lot of fruit and they're ripening nicely and the structure looks good. And I would be like, okay, so I'm going to save from this batch versus like maybe a plant in the same vicinity that just like wasn't doing so great. I'm like, cool, I'm not going to save from those.
Exactly.
Okay. And then like just over a year, season to season to season, you're constantly picking like the cream of the crop. So essentially you're doing your own kind of like Darwin.
Exactly.
Situation.
Yeah, you're
the whole Darwin situation.
And then, I mean, I also like the stories that come with the seeds. So I think that's really, it's just, you know, participating in this agrarian tradition and taking it with you. I mean, seed companies are great. I love seed companies. I've worked for different seed companies. I think they'll always continue to fill a need. But a lot of the seed companies that I love and I love to support are ones that are essentially doing that selection on a large scale. They're doing, they have farms and cooperate with other farmers to do this kind of seed work instead of buying like large lots of seed from overseas, which there's nothing wrong with, but it's just exciting to see us have more control and a bigger role in our seed history.
So when people talk about kind of building more biodiversity into the food supply, obviously, you know, seeds are in essence like genetic material. So the more kind of diverse genetic material that you have out there growing, I think gives us a certain amount of like robustness mm-hmm. from like space to space. But how is that different? Like if I'm, you know, starting with, let's say, the packet of seeds I get from like one of my favorite seed supply companies, and you're growing it out on your farm and you're selecting over time, and I'm growing out on my farm and I'm selecting it out over time, the like basic genetic material isn't really changing, or
I will say with a caveat, I am not a geneticist or a plant breeder.
Yes.
There are, so one thing that I have done for a while is bring my crops to the exhibition hall at the Common Ground Country Fair, where everyone showcases, you know, the best cream of the crop. I particularly like to bring winter squash. That's one of my favorites. They judge against the standard of the vegetable. But what's also really interesting to see is that my winter luxury pie pumpkin might not look like somebody else's winter luxury pie pumpkin. And it's not because we've necessarily grown grown it differently, it's because we might have started with different seed lots. So even though those genetics are the same, there's variance within that gene pool. So I had a winter...
Just like people, I guess. Yeah. We don't all look the same.
Exactly. Yeah. So I had a winter luxury pumpkin that was doing some crazy, like, striation stuff, which I thought was really cool, and the judges gave me some bad marks on.
Judges. Come on. Difference is good. Diversity. Not what they were looking for. Well, okay. So you're getting your farm going, but then also, you know, you have kind of... you're in Maine, so obviously it's like, you know, spring, summer, early fall, and then in the winter, how are you filling your time?
Yep. So in the winter, I'm doing some of the other farm enterprise stuff that I was experimenting with. I tried a value-added business where I fermented soybeans into tempeh. So I was doing a little bit of that. I was also working at seed companies. One of them I worked at for a number of years called Fedco in their trees division, where I would essentially keep me and the rest of the tree team. We would keep all of the trees that would be sold in the spring for planting happy during the winter time. So
planting happy.
Yeah. So they
will tell me more.
So the trees we would buy them in from local growers in the fall, and then larger distributors would ship them in through the winter. But they're supposed to be dormant, so we would keep them in like a 40-degree warehouse and water them and plant them in sawdust, and then we had to ship them. So we were putting trees in boxes and shipping them around the country.
Wow!
So that was it was interesting. It was a great connection to have, because most of the people were off-season farmers working there as well. And then that work eventually shifted into the current role that I have, which is managing the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, which is a national farmer supported. Well, all of our members, we're a member, a national member organization. We're a nonprofit, and all of our members are farmers and seed companies and affiliates who kind of support organic seed. So shifted into doing some more organizing and advocacy work through that.
So you're not currently on the farm. What happened?
So I moved my farm from the incubator to a leased land situation for a number of years. And then I decided I wanted to dial back and be closer to family while I put things together to buy a farm. So while leasing is a very viable option for young and beginning farmers, I felt like the current situation that I had wasn't fitting my needs, and I wanted to really reassess.
Yeah, so you're kind of like back in Connecticut now. Do you miss Maine? You were there for so long.
I love Maine, yeah. And Maine hasn't seen the last of me.
Hawk and Mainers. Well, I am so excited for you guys getting to hang with Holly over the course of 12 episodes in the winter season. I think you can tell just from hearing her from her a little bit already. Girl knows her stuff. We're going to take just a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what you can look forward to. So hang tight. We'll be right back.
Today's program was brought to you by Fire Cider. Did your grandmother ever tell you to drink raw apple cider vinegar? It's good advice, and more common than you may think. For generations of New Englanders, a tot of vinegar was a morning ritual. Taken daily, a tablespoon of unfiltered apple cider vinegar can help support immune function and digestive functions. To the base of certified organic apple cider vinegar, Fire Cider added whole, raw, certified organic oranges, lemons, onions, ginger, horseradish, habanero pepper, garlic, and turmeric. They let this mixture steep for 6 weeks at room temperature to preserve the living vinegar culture and delicate flavors of the ingredients. Lastly, they blend a generous helping of raw wildflower honey into the mix. The result is potent but balanced, offering layers of sweet, tart, and spice. Fire Cider tastes great on its own or as an addition to tea, juice, or salad. Fire Cider ships direct from their online store and is available at over 500 locations nationwide. Use their store locator to find one near you and ask for a free sample. For more information, visit firesider.com.
Hey, I'm Carrie Diamond.
And I'm Claudia Wu.
And we're the founders of Radio Cherry Bomb, which airs every Thursday at 1 o'clock on the Heritage Radio Network.
We're nothing without our listeners, literally.
Heritage Radio Network is a not-for-profit organization, and we rely on listener support.
So, when you have a minute, go check out heritageradionetwork.org and click on Beating Heart.
It's literally a beating heart. Give what you can. We appreciate every dime.
We love bringing you conversations with the coolest women in food, so help us continue to do that.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for donating.
You're the bomb.
Holly, you're the bomb.
Thank you, Erin.
Thanks to Carrie and Claudia for such a lovely drop. We are, folks, last time you're going to get to hear me say it in 2015, in the midst of our annual 100% necessary end of year funding drive. So if you have not taken the time to pull out your wallet, get out your phone, get out your computer, and make your way to the heritageradionetwork.org website. Click on that bleeding heart. I always say bleeding heart. Beating heart. It's bleeding. My heart is bleeding until you donate. Come say hello. Let them know that the Farm Report sent you. And really, any amount. $5, $10, $60 membership. We're doing this really fun cookbook that we'll send out this year. A little kind of party in a PDF. We've got t-shirts. We've got amazing Slate cheese boards. I mean, fun stuff, but mostly it's what makes our work possible. It lets us bring you kind of radio programming week after week. So definitely would love to see you on the donor rolls. Holly, one of the other things, you know, you're such a journey woman in this kind of like agriculture landscape. And I know that you have also spent some time abroad early in your agriculture experience doing some farming, but you've also been a Terra Madre delegate. You've attended conferences outside the U.S. Can you talk a little bit about kind of how your travels and getting to be around other kind of ag thinkers from around the world have influenced your perspective a little bit?
Yep. So I was fortunate enough to go to Terra Madre as a U.S. delegate, both in 2012 and again in 2014. And then in 2014, I kind of piggybacked that trip into going to Istanbul, Turkey, for the International Federation of Organic Agriculture Movements. I had to count those letters out. Also known as IFOM Organics, which is kind of the organic body in the world. There are different coalitions broken up by country and by region, but they host every 3 years. They host this really big conference and then also a policy meeting amongst IFOM members to bring, like you said, world agricultural thinkers together. And by participating, should I explain Terra Madre for people just briefly? Do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've talked about it a little bit, but I've actually never been.
Okay. So it's a meeting of Slow Food International that happens every 2 years in Turin, Italy, and they bring together delegates from all around the world. And the first year that I went, 2012, they also opened it up to the public. So there's two parts. There's Terra Madre, which is this sort of conference slash bazaar where everyone from all of their delegates are allowed to bring products. So it's like a massive indoor farmers market. And then they have Salone del Gusto, which is just like broken up by all the regions of Italy, and that's it's just all the regions of Italy in one Fiat factory, and it's kind of amazing.
All of Italy compressed. Yeah. I feel like I always like love Italians. When I did a semester abroad, and I was chatting with this guy, and he's like, "Come closer." He's like, "It's a very small country. We need to be close." I was like, "Okay."
But so through those experiences, it's just really great to meet. I always love interacting with other farmers, whether, they're producing the same kind of crops as me, doing much larger acreage. It's just that connectivity. You're doing something in isolation most of the time. So you're like spending all this long day. For me, you know, weeding a carrot row could take me like the better part of 12 hours or something. And it's, you know, so you're doing these long tasks, and it's really nice to just see. So I see the rewards of my tasks when I'm harvesting or when I'm going to farmers market, but it's really nice to connect with people around the world to be like, we're all in this together. And this is absolutely an essential part of human civilization. So it's really nice to just swap stories. And I always try a lot of different food, which I think is really important. I like to, especially...
I agree.
And I especially like at Terra Madre, there's the slow food arc of taste. They always do like this beautiful exhibit of the slow food arc things. And I grow a lot of those vegetable varieties. So it's really nice to be like, oh my God, like these people are growing the same thing halfway around the world. And so for me, it's mostly just kind of a celebratory event to go and interact with people. Of course, there are larger reasons why I went to some of them. And when I went to IFOM, I went as a representative for my work with OSCADA, the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. And I was representing some policy on seed, GMO thresholds in seed. So it was... You know, there. I think there's really important political reasons and other reasons to meet and convene with farmers. But I think the best part is just seeing it happen.
Yeah. Well, that kind of like you're like I'm learning. I'm also eating delicious food and hanging out with awesome people. Well, so I want to talk a little bit about what's in store for folks in 2016. But I do want to ask, you know, so you've mentioned that you're vegetarian. Mm-hmm. We've been talking a lot about like your history being really nested in kind of the organic food space. I feel like some of my listeners might be a little bit nervous. Ooh. That like I've brought in kind of a super lefty farmer who's not going to be kind of, you know, meeting folks where they're at and talking to about the majority of like food that's produced in this country and the way the majority of like American consumers eat, which is a shit ton of meat. So yeah. I don't know. I'm just wondering, like, should they be worried?
I don't think so. One thing I have... helped butcher two pigs. I did as a vegetarian who raised. I also should mention I raised livestock for 5 years. I did both chickens, laying hens, meat birds, and goats. And one of the things that I really came to terms with was that if I was going to raise livestock, I needed to be able to slaughter an animal in case a situation should arise in which life happens. Yeah. Whether it's a fox or a hawk or a foot in a fence, like you have to be prepared to humanely handle death on a farm. So one of the outcomes of death on a farm is meat. So to kind of orient myself with that, I did embark on a 3-day nose-to-tail pork workshop in which I was actually the skinning assistant while everyone else got to take turns doing all of the other tasks. I stood there and skinned one side of a pig.
Oh, wow.
And we also scraped one. And I also tried everything that we tasted while we were doing all the butchering and the processing and over the next few days. And I tried everything. So I do have an open mind. I just find that meat still doesn't really work well with my body.
Not for you. Yeah. Cool. So, but definitely like you're like engaged in the kind of like issues in the space. And what about organics?
I think organic is while I think it's a very, I'm committed to organic agriculture as a farmer. I think there's a wide world in what organic means. I think, the label is changing right now. I think we're seeing, different things happening with the NOP. I think, there's people who think they want to do organic and not certify. There's people who are more interested, in regenerative agriculture and don't really care about the label. They might just really be wanting to work on their soil. So I think there's a wide way in which farmers can occupy their land. And while I think I vote for more sustainable options, I think that ultimately food production brings, you know, I align with food producers. So I think I'm open to exploring different topics.
Excellent job. Tough question. I'll put her on the spot. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit. We've got about 5 minutes left here. 2016, what are some things that like you're excited about bringing to the fore? And what's a good way for people to kind of get in touch to pitch their show ideas to you?
Okay. So I'll start with how people could get in touch with me. They can hit me up on my email, which I think, will we have that on the
show? Yeah, we'll just put it on the show page. Yep.
We'll put it on the show page. And once I get more social media savvy, I will let you know how that works. But so in 2016, I'm really excited about origin stories, in particular Seed, as we've already heard a little bit about. It was near and dear to my heart. So I hope to do a two-part series on Seed, what that might look like. I'm still in the scheduling process, but I'm very interested in sort of navigating some of the breeding questions and seed companies' roles in farming. And I'm also on sort of origins on a different level. I'm really interested in some of the barriers to new and beginning farmers, as I have been through some of that and continue to go through that. One topic area that I think is really pressing is student loan forgiveness for new and, those are new and mostly farmers coming right out of college.
Sure, yeah.
I think we're seeing a lot of farmers who can hardly afford to get on land and finance equipment, and then are being additionally burdened by student loan debt, which could basically just flatten their farm before they get off the ground. And there's some interesting stuff going on with that. I think New York State already has an incentive program in the works, so I'd like to explore that topic a little bit more. And I know you've already branded me as a lefty, but I am interested in what the ag world might call specialty crops. The large ag world thinks vegetables.
Capital A are
specialty crops. But some of these different revenue streams, whether cut flowers, medicinal herbs, some of the agritourism. So some of the successes and challenges in areas of agriculture that we all interact with, but might not think much about.
Sure. Awesome. Oh, I'm excited. Guys, it's all happening. Well, Holly, I feel like the one other thing that I want to, kind of just make folks aware of is that you are not a Brooklynite like myself. Holly is commuting to us from New Haven, Connecticut. So New Haven listeners, hit her up locally. But she'll be in town in Brooklyn on Thursdays to do the show and to hang with us over at the Heritage offices. And then, like I said, you can find her on email. You can still follow me, of course. I'm Erin_Fairbanks, or get in touch with us via Heritage_radio or info@heritageradionetwork.org. Plenty of ways to make yourself known. Holly, thank you so much. I cannot wait to be on kind of like the other end and tuning in to listen to the Farm Report every week.
Oh, well, I'm happy to have you listening, Erin.
Have a happy, happy, happy new year, everyone out there listening. Hang tight. We will be back live in the studio the first week in January. Until then, if you need a little bit of like extra podcast love to kind of fill up your time, or those kind of like long commutes for holiday travel, or just some downtime with your family, I want to throw out some other Heritage shows that I've been really enjoying lately. Ferment About It is a great show. Chris Kuzme and Mary Izzet. It's all things fermentable. They talk a lot about beer, but also lactofermentation. So if you're ever curious about making, kombucha, sauerkraut, yogurt, they are super fun, kind of bringing the kind of geek fun squad to the kind of home brewing, making, makers, really practical advice and great kind of spotlights on lots of different types of super fun projects that one might want to take up this winter. And then, of course, Inside School Food, which I always love, Laura Stanley, bringing you kind of weekly updates on the federal school lunch policy. Really important work talking about kind of feeding the next generation of Americans and what's really working and what's not really working so well. Very, very great show. And then for something a little bit on the lighter side, I'm a big Love Bites fan. It's one of the newer shows here at the Heritage Radio Network. It's all about kind of love and sex and dating in the food world. So something a little bit more on the like high entertainment value. But you can binge listen through the season and follow the kind of love lives of the host, Jacqueline and Ben. They're pretty funny. And it's kind of a great kind of you know, picture at the New York dating scene and its trials and tribulations. So those are some of my top picks for some of your winter listening. Stay tuned. I will be coming back at you with a new show in January. Jack Inslee, the station's executive producer, and I are putting together a week in review, kind of a variety show that will spotlight all the amazing stuff that's happening every week here on the Heritage Radio Network. You know, we do over 35 weekly shows. It's a lot for anyone to listen to. So we're going to break that down, make it a little bit more digestible for you, kind of keep you up to date and bring you that real kind of like finger on the pulse of the food world vis-a-vis the Heritage Radio Network. So stay tuned for that. Thank you so much for listening. Happy New Year and stay tuned in.
Yeah. See you guys next year.
Woohoo!
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.